This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
DC for you. DC for you. DC for you. DC for you.
Great shades of Elvis. Place to Be Nation Pop, welcome back to DC for you, the only all DC comics show right here on the Place to Be Nation Pop Network. I am, of course, one of your hosts, Russell Sellers. Joining me on this journey, as always, from right here in the base of Quiznos adjacent to the Fortress of Solitude, is Mr. Todd Weber. How's it going, Todd?
You know, it's so early 90s in here, I can't even stand it.
I know, it's killing me.
Got my sport coat and my acid wash jeans on and I am just digging it.
Are you wearing a denim shirt, a denim button-up shirt?
It's an Eddie Bauer brand denim shirt.
I knew I could count on you to be fashionable. And, my God, speaking of fashionable, let's just dive right into what we're talking about here today. And it is that classic TV show from 1993 to 1997, Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, starring Dean Cain in the titular role, the breastular role, if you will, of Clark Kent and Superman, with the absolutely wonderful and gorgeous Terry Hatcher playing Lois Lane.
Yeah, to the max for Lois Lane.
Big time. She is incredibly attractive from the jump. I mean, she always was. She always is. But this first episode is the one we're talking about, the two-hour pilot that aired on ABC on September 12th, 1993. This was a pretty big departure and reinvention of Superman for a modern audience, because outside the comics, most people only thought of Superman as that the Christopher Reeve take, because he was still everybody's Superman up until just a few years prior to this. 1987, I believe, last time he played the character.
Yes, Superman IV: Quest for Peace was 1987, but we forget that there was a syndicated Superboy show.
I didn't forget.
Not long after that. Okay, good.
I never forgot.
That gap between the Reeve Superman and the Dean Cain Superman, we at least had Gerard Christopher and the other guy as the UHF channel Superman, Superboy.
Low
budget.
We are going to get to that.
Someday.
Yes, we are absolutely going to talk about the Superboy series. That was one of the staples of my childhood. But Lois and Clark is also a major staple of my childhood. Now, of course, in 1993, I was like 11 years old when this premiered. So, Todd, your perspective should be a little bit different than mine. So what did you think of this pilot episode of Lois and Clark?
You know, I only watched this a couple months ago when the DC Universe service started. I said, okay, time to fill in this gap. This was not a show I watched back in the 90s. I don't know if it was out of protest or just I was living la vida loca in my college years, but I was never home to watch this show. And although reading comics, I think I wasn't necessarily a fan of my superficial ideas of the casting of this. I didn't necessarily appreciate that he was not Christopher Reeve looking, you know. It was kind of a thing where I've always been the Superman. Clark is the real guy and Superman is the mask he puts on. But for the story or the conceit to be that Lois falls for Clark before she falls for Superman, or at least that they become a couple in spite of things. Always kind of rubbed me wrong, even though it was true to the comics at the time. So I don't know. I had misgivings about it, and I was such a Christopher Reeve loyalist that I just kind of wrote off before watching it. And, you know, I guess I regret that just because it kept the character out there for a while on ABC TV for free.
Yeah, it was. It ran for 4 seasons, all the way up to 1997. But I mean, we're not going to get in depth on how the show evolved or what it eventually became. But here at the beginning, one of the principal differences between this and pretty much every other iteration of Superman or even Superboy that we alluded to out there was this show put the emphasis very much on the Clark Kent side of the character. There's not a lot of talk about his alien heritage. We don't really spend too much time on the end of him. This is so much more about his relationships with the people that work at the Daily Planet, and with, much to my delight, his relationship with Ma and Pa Kent, who are absolutely wonderful in this show.
That is absolutely my favorite part of the show. It kind of reflects what was going on in the Death of Superman era, you know, with that tight-knit relationship between Clark, Ma, and Pa. You know, it's almost the Jerry Ordway art almost comes to life during this.
It really does. It is so wonderfully done. But the aesthetics of the show, I mean, it does look incredibly 90s and dated. But, I mean, as far as a pilot goes, I've seen way worse when it comes to the set designs and costuming. I mean, of course, they were working on a much smaller budget here because they didn't know if they were going to be picked up when they were making this particular, I guess, what could really be called a two-parter episode, even though it is just one extra long one. And I guess we should tell the people a little bit about the plot here. It is Clark Kent's very first day in Metropolis. He is jobless and homeless, essentially. So he's trying his hand at getting his big reporter job at the biggest newspaper in the world, the Daily Planet. He has kind of traveled the world, as we learn as the issue or as the one that he's got experience writing stories, but nothing on the level of what the Daily Planet does. So he struggles quite a bit trying to get Perry White to give him a shot. And big shouts to the late Lane Smith, who is still to this day my favorite iteration of Perry White. Tremendous performance from the start.
Yeah, he nails the character. And because the show ran for so long, you're really able to give Perry a depth that you hadn't really seen in, say, the Superman movies, Jackie Cooper as Perry White. So Lane and his dentures and his Elvis affectation are very, very appreciated here. Great character. Holds his own with the leads of the show throughout the run.
He steals the show for me. Even in this pilot episode where he's very much meant to be just a supporting character, but every time he's on screen, he's genetic. This guy is it when it comes to Perry White for me. When I read Superman comics now, I put a Southern inflection on his voice just out of my love of this version of Perry White. He's too good. Like, I have no real love for the catchphrase "Great Caesar's Ghost." To me, it's always going to be "Great Shades of Elvis." It will always be "Great Shades of Elvis." He is so much better. If I'm ever given the reins of a Superman comic, you can damn well bet I am going to be writing "Great Shades of Elvis" to that dialogue.
Yeah, and apparently the actor is from Memphis.
Yes.
So, you know, there is the connection there. So maybe he brought it to the character. He said, "Hey, directors, let me throw this in," and I guess it stuck. So he doesn't have a cigar often enough, though, for me.
I'm back and forth on that. Like, I can take it or leave it. But one thing that I also really appreciate about his performance is how he brings the journalism aspect to this show. which is something that gets kind of glossed over sometimes in Superman stories. They spend a lot of time talking about, maybe the personal life of Clark and Lois, or maybe they get into, the head of Superman as a character. But when it comes to the supporting cast, Perry and Jimmy especially, you got to get into the weeds a bit with the journalism aspect of it. Like, really show us some of that hard, old school newspaper man dialogue. And man, if I didn't know better, I would say that Lane Smith has been doing it his entire life. He really goes for it. Right in the pilot too, he actually has the line that kind of became my favorite line from him, and it's just a small thing. But he, at one point, is going over a story that Lois and Clark and Jimmy all kind of collaborated on, that's based on some hearsay and some kind of like flimsy evidence. Like, they don't really have all the pieces there to make the story stick. And Perry, like, after very sarcastically looking at them and asking if he is expected to run this, he interrupts their response by saying, "Facts. Hard facts. Go out there and bring me some." I was like, that's a home run. That is everything that I want out of Perry White.
Yeah, all you journalism graduates out there, that's you appreciate that about this. There was also an Astro City issue that really gets to the guts of journalism and says, what do we report? We can't report anything we don't know. It has to be facts. And so this editor keeps rejecting the story until it's just nothing but very simple facts with no – and I'll find that issue to reference, because that's probably my favorite thing comic book story-wise about a journalism reference, because they do. They, in the stories, especially Superman stories of old, they gloss over those aspects of it. They're telling the story of Superman more than they are telling about Clark and Lois and their jobs.
Yeah, and that's what makes this show, I think, so refreshing, especially this episode, that we spend so much time with just Clark and getting perspective, getting what it's like to have all these powers, but he's trying so hard to be human, because that's really who he wants to be. He is... Unlike some people's more subtle impressions of Superman, he's not doing an impression of a human being. He's not, portraying what he thinks a human looks like. He was raised as a human, so that's how he thinks of himself. But
he's the son of Martha and Jonathan, 100%.
Exactly. That's who he is at his core. And that's what this show does so beautifully, is it doesn't give us that wide dichotomy between the two versions of Clark that we're used to seeing, the bumbling version that Christopher Reeve played really well versus the almost godlike figure that he becomes whenever he's in the Superman suit. This take on Superman gives you the real Clark, the one who isn't trying to be the superhero. He's not trying to be the reporter. He's just himself. He's that small town, raised on a farm, Kansas all-American guy who really does just want to do the right thing and live in a just world and try to help it become that. So in those interactions between he and his parents, that's when we really see Dean Cain, I think, just really shine, because he's totally tuned in to that version of Clark Kent, and that is absolutely my favorite version of this character. So, what were your impressions of the three different versions of Clark that we see in this show?
So we're saying we have Superman Clark, which is the mask, the confidence, the cooler than thou Superman. And you have Clark, who has more self-esteem than we usually see Clark Kent have. And then we have Clark with his parents. Is that what we're saying is the third version?
The version with his parents is the real him.
That's the real Clark, yeah. So I guess I struggled with a likable, handsome Clark Kent for a long time, just because I was raised on the Christopher Reeve. Clark Kent is such a buffoon. So that to me is a third Clark Kent too, if we think about that one. And to me, the differentiation between the two Clark Kent personas is not as strong, but I guess I get it a little bit more now. You know, there's professional Clark and then there's vulnerable Clark. And so I see it a little bit more having watched it a couple more times. I think it's very important to note, and they didn't make a big different deal about this, but Dean Cain is half Japanese.
Yes.
And they don't, you know, nobody knew that back in the day. He takes on his middle name as his last name instead. His father's Japanese. And so I thought it's very interesting that I didn't know that wife did. You know, she pointed that out to me. It's like, there should be more representation for Asian Americans. And oh my gosh, I forgot he does wear the denim shirt in this. In the pilot, he is wearing his denim shirt. It's so 90s, but great at the same time. Slightly longer hair, not quite a mullet. It's almost a mullet, but not quite a mullet.
Yeah,
but it's longer hair than you would normally see Superman having.
It was that 1993 era look for Superman, because this was circa death of Superman. So they wanted to get that look for him, or I guess it's Return of Superman is when he had the mullet going on. So that all was like the parts that really worked for me in this episode. Some stuff that doesn't.
Yeah. Visions.
Oh boy.
The
visual effects leave a good bit to be desired. Even by 90s standards, there are times when Clark flying at night is fine for the most part. Landings are a little wonky and weird looking. But
heat
of course,
vision.
The heat vision is pretty hilarious. Because it's, man, you can. Oh, I don't even know how to describe it. Just the copy, cut, paste version of the heat vision is pretty bad. But then there's the explosion of the space shuttle. That's real rough. Even by 90s standards, that is
the X-ray vision. About the walking around the room, spinning room gag?
I appreciate that. As an homage maybe to the old Batman 66 show. Like, we can do something similar to that by having a room that rotates.
Yes.
And like a fixed camera so that you can't tell the room is rotating. I remember watching a making of thing of that particular scene. I think it was on Entertainment Tonight because they were just so like impressed at the time with the practical effects of a Superman show like this. And yeah, it was impressive for the time. I remember being a kid and thinking, wow, that's really neat that's how they captured this shot. Of course, when you watch it now, it sticks out like a sore thumb, but it is what it is. It's if you have to judge it by 90s standards, it's not that
90s
bad.
90s standards, yep. There are worse things out there. Man, I would testicle to be as handsome as Dean Cain is in this pilot.
He is a very attractive man. He very much looks like Superman. And to your point about him being half Japanese, I really appreciate them trying to have a racially ambiguous Superman.
Yes.
And this is the first time, I think, in any media where Superman is not blue-eyed.
Blue-eyed. And that bugged me at the time. Like I said, you know, I thought, oh, they have a Mediterranean-looking Superman. That's, all right. But I didn't know that would be a thing about myself, you know. Everything has to be traditional.
Yeah.
And even as a 21-year-old, I was 21 when this pilot came out, or the series started showing. I was kind of a gatekeeper even then, I suppose.
we all go through that phase, I think. It's just the jolt of something different being brought in, even if it is something only slightly so, because Dean Cain so passes for being white.
Without question.
But when I look at when I watch this pilot now, knowing his heritage and just looking at through the lens of representation on television, it's like, this is a pretty brilliant idea that should have been followed up on in later Superman iterations, a racially ambiguous Superman, because I mean, he's not human, he's Kryptonian. How do we know what they look like? Like, how do we know what their race isn't going to be, like black, whatever? It's going to be, it could very well be something completely different.
And Smallville goes right back to the dark hair, blue eyed, traditional Superboy, Superman look.
As did Zack Snyder's Man of Steel. The current Superman is very much that, even though he's British.
Yep.
But he's still very much, you know, square jawed white guy with blue eyes. And that, all of that kind of makes me appreciate Dean Cain that much more in his casting. The producers of the show might have been a little bit more forward thinking than first thought.
So yeah, I mean, who knows if they even knew? At least they said, okay, the dark eyes are not a deal breaker, or they didn't make him wear blue contacts. And I don't know if Brandon Routh wore blue contacts for Superman Returns. I don't recall. But even as much as it was an homage to the Richard Donner Superman films, if they did that or not. One thing that isn't faked is the chemistry between Hatcher and Kane, which is tremendous from the get-go.
Oh, they nail it. Like, these two, certainly, this is where the show was going to live and die. If these two didn't work, if they didn't have chemistry, this show falls on its face from the outset. And that, as you just said it, Bubba, this was absolutely gold. Mm-hmm. These two were so good together, and it holds up. Like it, if nothing else in this show is worth watching over and over again, it is the chemistry between Terry Hatcher and Dean Cain. Just what brilliant casting director put these two together. I don't know, but man, they deserve every bit of money they got and more.
Yeah, and this was the last time a DC property was associated with ABC. I don't know if ABC was Disney-owned at that point, but it's kind of interesting that, you know, maybe somebody who made that decision went on to work on in the bigger end of casting for Marvel, because this is great casting. They nail it. We were talking about two-hour pilots. There aren't two-hour pilots anymore. I mean, the last one I can think of that I watched was maybe Lost. I don't know. Can you think of any other two-hour pilots? I guess Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. might have been 2 hours, too.
Yeah, maybe. It's a rarity. Anyway, so, I mean, that kind of – I guess that shows how much confidence ABC had in this show to say, all right, we're going to shoot this two-hour pilot episode and allow it to air – as a two-hour episode. Like, it's movie length. And it feels kind of like a, you know, albeit a low-budget one, a Superman film. It develops its characters out, maybe in too long a fashion. Maybe it wouldn't have taken necessarily long to get to the point of this story. But it does a pretty strong job of making you care about what's happening. And one other character that we haven't touched on that we absolutely must, because he is an integral part, especially of this first season, and that is John Shea's Lex Luthor.
Yep. He, corporate, eccentric, cool, handsome, real hair.
Yes, that's his real hair, and yet he stared down a cobra, sort of.
Yeah, the first time we meet him, basically, you know.
You said it, man. What a cool version of Lex Luthor. I am very much in on this take on Lex. It was absolutely great the first time I saw it. He's amazing in pretty much all of his appearances, which he's only a cast regular in this first season. But he does appear throughout the series. He is an ongoing presence, but as like main cast, like in the opening credits, not listed as a guest star. This is his only full season, and that's also true of one other mainstay, and that would be Tracy Scoggins' Cat Grant.
Right, very very early '90s. Cat Grant.
I gotta tell you, man. I remember being a kid and thinking that she was really, really hot. And now that I'm older, I'm like, No,
no, give me Lois. Yeah,
no, she is not a no. Mm-mm. That she is not.
It's a lot of awkward.
Yeah, there is a lot of. I'm trying not to be mean here, but she's a bit man. She's a bit mannish.
That's a man, baby.
That's a man. That's no woman. That's a man, baby. And she's constantly after Clark, which is also like a source of great comedy. I think it's funny whenever she's hitting on him, and he's like, if I were a angrier person, I'd probably be walking out to HR right now and reporting you for sexual harassment.
It's such an interesting kind of relic, but still entertaining. This whole pilot, where they, Martha sews his costume, kind of that sequence is almost out of the Man of Steel John Byrne miniseries.
It very much is. I loved that sequence. Set to that classic song, "I Need a Hero." what a musical montage that was, and. I mean, we haven't really touched on much of the overall background plot of the show, of course, it being that they're investigating possible sabotage into a shuttle launch that's supposed to be for disease research in zero-gravity environment on board a station orbiting Earth. Of course, it all turns out to be a plot by Lex Luthor to sabotage the whole thing so he can build his own private one and make a bunch of money off of it. But that's really just more or less the MacGuffin of it all to give Superman a reason to exist.
Yeah. Why does Superman go public? Why does he show up? And then Clark gets the story, or at least, that's kind of the Man of Steel origin, is he saves the shuttle and writes the story.
In this case,
a lot goes on.
In this case, it's Lois who's definitely going to be getting the story. He just made that decision to go public as Superman. And that was a nice touch, but unfortunately, Lois is fully fooled by a pair of glasses. There's not a lot of difference between Dean Cain with glasses and Dean Cain without. it's like, if you even bother looking at his face, you'll be like, that's definitely the same dude.
Same chin, same ears. The hair gets slicked back, but the thing John Byrne did to differentiate Clark and Superman from people who would see both of them would be he would never let himself be photographed as Superman. He would vibrate his face so fast that nobody could get a clear picture of him. Now, I don't know how long they kept up that conceit, but they definitely don't refer that to that here, because boy, it's pretty darn obvious. That's one thing I had a criticism of this portrayal of Clark. I mean, Christopher Reeve slouched and was clumsy and bumbling, and they're trying to make Clark cool and relevant and lovable here, but. There's just not enough difference between Superman and Clark. But we buy in, it's comic books, it's silly, doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's easy to buy into the show because of how charming all of these characters are, like the versions that they portray on screen. But if, like you said, if you start thinking about it a little too much, there's really no reason anyone should be fooled by Clark's disguise here. Now, in modern comics, a lot of times artists will portray Clark as wearing clothes that are like way too big for him, to make himself look a little more like overweight, and to also have him slouch and kind of raise his voice an octave, which is something, of course, you can't hear in comics. But that's
Frank Quitely makes me think of that, the All-Star Superman version arc.
Yeah, very much so. Like he does that. He makes Clark not bumbling and silly like he is in the Christopher Reeve movies, but just more of a meek personality, someone who's like very non-confrontational, a people pleaser, like somebody who's just trying to make everyone around him happy. To avoid conflict at all costs. And then whenever he's Superman, he's standing upright. He's wearing, you know, a skin-tight suit, no glasses, hair changed. So he could conceivably look like a completely different person, carrying himself with a lot more confidence. Now, the degree to which that works probably depends on your ability to suspend and
without question, or how much you are sexually invested in either of the lead characters,
which is greatly on both accounts.
Hey-o. No lies. Me too.
Yeah, it's straight up like this is a pretty solid pilot overall, I think I would say. So what's your overall verdict on Lois and Clark's pilot?
A B. It's a B, grade B. I would definitely watch it again, but I'd probably watch it for Terry Hatcher reasons from here on out. I get it. It's fun enough. I wish there was more DC lore, you know, Superman characters besides the ones we're introduced here. I wish there were more guest stars, you know, a la the Arrowverse. It's Superman on TV, and it brought us Terry Hatcher. So there we go.
And I think I'm going to go there. I'm going to go with a high B. It's almost a B+, not quite there, but a solid B grade, one that is certainly watch. And you can watch the entire series on DC Universe right now. One of my favorite parts of that app was that the entire Lois and Clark series was uploaded from day one and has
yes.
been and has been there this whole time. So I don't think it's going anywhere. This is a one of the best reasons to invest. You can watch this entire series. So I think we'll probably revisit this series again in later episodes. We'll pick another classic episode or two to dive into from the other. Like three seasons of this show. There are certainly some fun and classic ones, and there are some oddball, weird as hell ones too.
Maybe the wedding episode.
That's one.
Or the Lois Striptease episode.
There we go. Now we're talking. Now we're getting into the one that people. That's the one that's going to put. That's going to put butts in seats, as they say. But. With that brings us to the end of another DC4U episode. We're glad that you guys joined us on this one. It was a fun time talking Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, Episode 1, the pilot. So, with that, if you want to talk more about this episode and more offerings on DC Universe, more Superman as we've been doing all month long so far, join the Place to Be Nation Comics group on Facebook. Request, we'll add you, and you can comment on this and all the like amazing shows that we've got going on in the comics feed. Follow PT at PTBN Comics on Twitter, and you can stay up to date with all of the shows that we're putting out there. And of course, you can follow Todd and I individually on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me at Russell_Sellers on both. Todd, where are they going to find you?
At Guitars of Green on Instagram, at Todd Weber Guitar on Twitter. Subscribe to Place to Be Nation on iTunes, review and rate us. Check us out, and maybe we'll set up a Patreon or something so you can keep us in Hostess products.
Hey, that would be great. I absolutely could go for some Hostess right now.
Cupcakes.
Yes. Oh, man, I was thinking about some Twinkies earlier. That would have been great. I was also re-listening to the old Laugh in Theater, Andy and Tim talking about Ghostbusters, so it kind of got me in the mood.
Excellent. Yeah, are you still mad at Tim about that, or are you good?
Only slightly. Okay. I only yelled at the pod a couple of times this time around. It was a much calmer experience. But supposedly I'm going to be back on Laugh in Theater in season 2 to maybe talk some Ghostbusters 2.
So that would be logical, wouldn't it?
It would. It would be tremendous for me to get there because I love that one too. But
I guess you're going to control all on your own.
My God, I'm just going to start singing the Bobby Brown song.
Yep.
It's going to happen. Underrated soundtrack. People,
and it's underrated movie to me. It's still Ghostbusters.
Exactly. It's incredibly quotable, but I'll get to that all at a later time. I don't want to steal Andy's thunder here. But we can, you guys can expect even more from us coming up in the very near future. Of course, we are in season one of our show, and we're going to get as much content as we can here in season one, and then we'll see where we go from there. But thank you guys again for joining us on D4U.
DC4U.
We will see you next time.
DC4U.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop Feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, DC4U listeners, thanks again for checking out another episode of DC4U, the only weekly all DC Comics podcast right here on the Place to Be Nation Pop Feed. We're extending this episode by a little bit because we've had some unfortunate news come out this past week, and that the actor who played Pa Kent on Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, actor Eddie Jones, has passed away at the age of 84. He was a prolific actor, appearing in movies like A League of Their Own, Seabiscuit. He was also in Steven Spielberg's The Terminal in 2004, and in one of my personal favorite superhero films from the 1990s, The Rocketeer. He's had a prolific career. He was an amazing Pa Kent. He was the definition of that character for me for so long. Todd, I think that might have been true for you as well. Yes?
Yeah, he was the Jurgens era Pa Kent come to life. And just wonderfully personified that character. Loved his relationship both with Ma Kent and with Clark on the show. And he will be missed. That was a great performance. An integral part of that show was the relationship between the parents and Clark. So, yeah, Eddie Jones did a great job on that. And I'm surprised to read all these other credits, but I guess I'm not surprised because he must have been an awesome actor in other things, just because as we saw, as he was on Lois and Clark.
Absolutely. He was a tremendous talent, and we're very sad to hear that he has passed. Our thoughts are, of course, with his family, with those that knew him best and loved him. And again, the defining Pa Kent of an era has unfortunately passed away, but we will continue on enjoying his work. His legacy is going to live forever because the guy was in just some absolutely amazing work. He was a tremendous talent. Sad to see him go. But in addition to that, we also have to tell you guys about some other things that have been happening here on Place to Be Nation Pop and on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. So with that, we'll get into some of the other shows that you should be checking out before you you surf on over to any other feeds or any other shows. Of course, Todd and I are members of the Sarcastic Four. We just took a look at the second part of our venture into 1971. And it's the first time that we've done a three-parter episode, and oh boy, is it! It's certainly something.
We looked at the worst Hulk issue ever, in my opinion.
It's hard to disagree with that. There's some good stuff that occurred, Spider-Man, throughout that that reading assignment, but still, 1971 loaded with some real comedy in that episode. So I think you guys need to go check that out. And on the 31st episode of Songs with Friends, Steve and Kelly are talking Gin Blossoms and DMX. And I am a Gin Blossoms mark, so I am here for that. They talked about a classic song in Hey Jealousy. Every band I've ever played in has wound up playing that song at some point. that's real talk. And of course, our brethren over at the Hard Traveling Fanboys are continuing with Spider-Man Month, a month near and dear to my heart as a big Spider-Man fan. And they're looking back this week at the 2002 Sam Raimi-directed Spider-Man film, a movie that does not age all that well, but it is still a fun time with some truly great scene-chewing performances. Now, Geek and Sassy, some of our other friends, another member of the Sarcastic Four, Tim Capel, along with Jennifer Smith. I've already screwed this up because Geek and Sassy is not hosted by Tim Capel. It is, in fact, hosted by Jennifer Smith. He is just guesting on the show.
That's right.
With Jennifer Smith and Miranda Berthold, as they are set to recap season 2 and preview season 3 of Stranger Things. Which is apropos because Glenn Scott and their friend Alana are back with a new spectacular review of Stranger Things Season 3. So you go listen to Geek and Sassy for the preview, and then you go over to the Glenn Butler podcast Hour Spectacular, and you check out the review of Season 3. It all works in tandem with each other. It's good stuff.
Did you see all of Season 3 yet?
I did. Elizabeth and I just finished watching season 3, and spoiler alert, we were both huge fans of it.
Well, yeah. And Back to the Future references galore.
She's never seen it.
Oh, man.
I know. Wow. I'm still shocked, and I'm trying to talk her into at least watching the first one. That's gonna happen. It has to.
Yeah.
But speaking of great things from the 80s. The Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament continues. We're getting like 6 polls a day at this point for round 1. And everybody can get in on the action. You can go like the Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament Facebook page. Every day it's going to put up 6 new polls, like songs randomly picked to go head-to-head against each other. And you vote on it. Like, make your voice heard that way. You can also... you can vote twice if you do it on Twitter when they post the polls there. So make sure you get in on that. Todd, I don't know about you, but there have been some matchups that were just like no-brainers, but then there have been others that were just like pearl-clutching, fist-pounding on the desk, difficult to make a decision on.
Yes, there have been some competitive matchups, some struggling ones I really struggled with. You know, is this a song I like better, or is it just something that's more important to the 80s? Today I had to make a very difficult choice. Madonna's Like a Prayer versus Murray Head, One Night in Bangkok from the musical Chess. And I am a musical theater nerd. I am not ashamed to tell you. If you follow me on Twitter, you will see occasional references to Cats and Les Miserables and Starlight Express. But One Night in Bangkok, That was a Broadway show, or a song from a Broadway show that ended up on the pop charts in 1985, 1986 or so. Maybe earlier than that, but some tremendous lyrics to that. I'm resisting the temptation to break into rap, but I'm not going to do it. But to do the lyrics, but anyway, that would be. You want to hear a complaint about a live read? It would be me singing the lyrics from One Night in Bangkok. Anyway, overall, the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed for you this week.
How's that for a segue?
Yeah, that was. Anyway, cut. In the 11th episode of Row One, Seat One, Ben chats with Evolve, ROH, and. No, he talks about those subjects. This is a great read. With indie superstar Kurt Stallion, who was recently on WWE Network Evolve show. So you got to hear his interview here on PTBN Wrestling and then see him wrestle in the same weekend. What a country. On episode 130 of Main Event, your host, Scott Criscolo, and his co-hosts, Nate Milton, Steve Willey, are joined by Sheriff Pete Schirmacher, and they talk about 5 shows in 4 days. Good Lord, that's a lot of shows to preview. Hope if you, I got to see some of those shows this past weekend. I was on vacation, but I did see some of Extreme Rules and some of the AEW show. So pretty good weekend.
Yeah,
At the show at AEW. What did you see?
I definitely watched AEW because it was fantastic, top to bottom. Just a great card. And was trying to be eagle-eyed to find our friends, the Hard Traveling Fanboys, as they were in the audience, but I never could see them.
There was a weird glare coming from, I think it was the second row, but it may have been the lights reflecting on certain bald individuals.
I also did watch Extreme Rules, and it was a pretty solid show overall. There was some down moments, but some really great ones too. And I've watched most of that Evolve show, and I've really been loving that tag match that's in there for the tag titles. Whoa!
I will check it out. I'm a fan of a lot of the Evolve wrestlers. Of course, you watch Evolve, and the next year half that roster moves up. So. Evolve Wrestling is a good thing to get into. Russell and I have actually gone to Evolve shows together.
Yes, we have.
A couple different ones on Mania weekend. So good stuff. Check out Evolve Wrestling if you haven't seen it before. Tim Capel, Jennifer Smith, and Gregory Phillips, Gregor Bruce, are back with Randy talking WCW. They look at War Games from the 90s. Not the 80s War Games from the Great American Bash, but the War Games from the 90s. JT Rizzuto and Chad Campbell open up 1996 as a pay-per-view year. They are looking at the Royal Rumble on the latest Wrestling War Zone. That's a show that covers the Monday Night Wars between then WWF and WCW. PTBN staff members Jennifer Smith, Drew Wardlaw, and Matt Souza, he of many interesting nicknames, gather to break down the 1986 Crockett Cup show that recently dropped on the network, a hidden gem, if you will. I did watch much of that, and that's kind of my era of wrestling, or at least Turner Wrestling, I like to call it, NWA/UWF. There, that was a thing, which also known as Mid-South, along with eventually became WCW. Latest episode of PTBN Podcasts. Just dropped. JT and Scott welcome the great Tim Slomka, a man I have met, to the mothership. They talk the 1989 October Madison Square Garden house show. Good stuff on the network, both on Pop Feed and Wrestling Feed. We are also doing a site-wide tribute on placetobenation.com to 1994. We are celebrating the 25th anniversary of 1994. Russell was 12. I was 22.
I was a youngin'.
Yeah, if we're doing the drinking game, I refer to how old I was back in a particular year. But, the show is talking...
Girlfriend's name in 94?
Girlfriend's name in 94 was... Well, let's see. I had a couple different ones. The first one was a girl named Trish, who ghosted me before ghosting was a thing. And then I hooked up with a girl at choir camp that summer. And then I kind of ghosted her before college started because I knew I was going to hook up with Mandy, the flute player. And then under complicated circumstances, I was going out with Mandy on Friday, and then I had a new girlfriend on Monday named Dory. And Dory and I were together for a couple years. But anyway,
I count four in there.
Kissing hookups too. There was, but anyway, I'm sounding really pathetic here. But we just got Tim Cable just got drunk.
That's exactly right. I was like, for you keeping score at home, that's four shots you just had to take there, Tim. I hope you did it.
To all the girls I'd loved before.
I did that to get Tim drunk.
Anyway, 1994 had lots of stuff. We're writing about it on the site. A good friend of mine named Michael Dodamos wrote about the TV miniseries The Stand, looking at the 1994 Academy Awards, movies like Pulp Fiction, Forrest Gump, lots and lots of good stuff coming up. Also, the excellent network adventure. That's a thing where they go through shows available on WWE Network and watch them chronologically, then write about them. They're looking at Black Saturday from 1984. I don't know if that's a day that there was a lot of sales. Actually, I know what that was. That was a day that Vince McMahon showed up on Turner Wrestling, which was a whole different thing. So you should check out that article. Check out our social media pages, such as Place to Be Nation on Twitter, like Place to Be Nation on Facebook. We've got so much content for you, and it's all free. If you are interested in joining our greatest WWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project, we are doing that too. That's at www.bigelow34.proboards.com. It's a message board. We have a lot of threads about the greatest WWE/WWF televised matches. All right. That's it for the live read. So you have been informed. Thanks for listening to DC4U. Hope that you liked us talking about Lois and Clark. It's late. I'm going to sign off now. So thanks again, and we will see you next time. Say bye, Russell.
Bye, Russell.